This is the Dirt Don't Lie podcast, unfiltered conversations with Santa Barbara County wine farmers. I'm Gabe Saglier, and in today's show, Ryan Carr admitting to some early mistakes planting wine grapes in Santa Barbara County, and the one grape that best describes who he is. Coming your way right now on Dirt Don't Lie. Well, it's a real treat for me to talk to this man right here, Ryan Carr from Carr Vineyards and Winery. I mean, we're talking 2014, but you and I go back, what, about 15 years?
Yeah, at least. It's been a while.
It's been a little while. We first met because we were talking vineyards. I mean, you got into vineyards before winemaking, and gosh, what got you into the vines, into the dirt back in the day?
Always had a love for plants and how they grow. I mean, ever since I was a kid. But the vineyard stuff kind of came up with Santa Barbara itself.
Yeah.
My parents moved to the Santa Barbara area when I was in college, and my dad discovered the wine industry out in Santa Barbara County, and he would send me bottles, getting me interested in wine just as a beverage. But we talked about the idea of potentially planting a vineyard or getting a piece of property out in San Ynez. When I came back from school a couple times, explored the San Ynez Valley and just fell in love with the place. I mean, it really is a magical, spectacular place. There's nothing else quite like it that I've ever come across. And so, I mean, it was a natural for me to get involved with a vineyard manager out here, just to get out of the office. I was studying to be a graphic designer at the time. And so a lot of time spent behind the computer, and it was just wonderful to get back outside. When I was in college, I worked as a landscaper. So, it kind of kept me in with the plants, but I've always been a very outdoors person and, enjoyed being outside in the sun and on the hills and whatnot.
And you can hear people tell you all they want how spectacular a place like the San Ynez Valley is. Mm-hmm. And you can see, movies like Sideways, and you can look at photographs, but until you actually put your feet onto the dirt, that's right. When you realize just really how sort of magical this place really is.
There's no doubt. I mean, some of the hilltops when you have a cloudy morning and the fog's laying low, and I mean, it's amazing. These little hilltops pop up; they look like islands, and I mean, it's such a unique country: rolling hills and nice valley floors. But it's not flat by any means. You've got a lot of diverse microclimates in it, and that's really what makes it a unique spot.
Yeah. Santa Barbara's so known as an area that was born from experimentation. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I think as we see some varietals like the Bordeaux, we're finally, after 35 plus years, figuring out exactly where they should go. Yeah. When you were getting in the 90s, as you were getting the first wine you made was a cab.
Correct.
Were you riding sort of a learning curve wave at that time as well?
Oh, most definitely. Every year we're getting better and better at this. I mean, in California, we're still in our infancy when it comes to figuring out what and where to plant things. In the last 15 years that I've been here growing grapes, I've learned dramatic amounts as to what goes best in what situation. And, looking back on the first cab I made, that was definitely not planted in the right place. And
where was it?
It was more center of San Ynez, Ballard Canyon.
Okay.
Not to say that it's a bad spot for it by any means, but there are definitely better spots.
Yeah.
You can see that happening, and the lines are changing, and you're seeing more definition for varietals and appellations and things like that in the recent years.
So Carr Vineyards and Winery, the wine label, mm-hmm. Eventually comes to be. You started that in about 2000.
Correct.
How do you begin to even select the varietals that you're going to declare as your own and put out for the world to taste?
Well, at that point in time, it was what I had accessible. I actually started out with Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc, and that just happened to be a vineyard that I worked at that was two blocks down the street from me. And for a lot of people, I mean, that's what defines what wines they're making is location. Where is the property that they own to plant grapes on? And they're defined by what works there. Now, in my situation, I farm 15 vineyards that are scattered throughout the county. So I'm actually in a situation where I can produce multiple different varietals. And there isn't one varietal that defines Carr now. We produce several. We've got Pinot Noir in the far west. Syrah and Grenache in the center of San Ynez, and then the Bordeaux varietal is out on the east side. So, I mean, we get to work with all the different microclimates that exist here, and that's one of my favorite things is that I don't have that varietal that defines us.
Yeah, you sort of keep yourself open, and then your drinking public is sort of exposed to a nice variety as well.
Exactly.
Now, the first one I met through you was Cabernet Franc. It was a Car Cab Franc that I fell in love with, and to this day, it's you're still making Cab Franc. And it's selling well.
Correct, yeah. It started out with that vineyard that was right down the street from my house in Ballard. It was a good Cab Franc, there's no doubt. And I mean, when it comes to growing grapes and making wine, it's all about how you grow it. There's no doubt. But as I've explored the area, my plantings for Cabernet Franc have moved further and further east, and I've found better and better locations and also approaches to farming it.
Yeah.
And it shows in the wine.
Any varietal you've never worked with that you think one day you're going to actually pluck and make wine from?
I'm sure there are. There's no doubt. I have yet to run down the port road with, you know, Titicaca and things like that.
Although you've now gone down the sparkling road.
I did.
Right?
I did. I made my first sparkling wine, started it in 2009, and we did the traditional method Champenoise, and it took a long time. It was a tremendous amount of work.
Labor of love, right?
It takes forever. I mean, making wine already takes a long time. You try to make sparkling wine, it takes even longer.
Those bubbles are tiny, but boy, they to get them to go right, it's quite the effort, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
So, you know, you're managing 15 vineyards throughout Santa Barbara County.
Mm-hmm.
And the dirt don't lie, right? And we're looking at 2014. Now, every vintage obviously brings, and every growing season brings its own, you know, cache of uncertainties, of curveballs, of things that are wonderful and things that are just downright frightening, I would imagine.
Oh, yes.
What is 2014 telling you thus far? Because it's been unusually hot.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year. I mean, no rain.
Right.
We've had a couple storms come through, drop us maybe, you know, a quarter inch, you know, a three-quarter inch. I think our best rain we had just recently, which was very late in the season, and we got a few inches out of it. But without those long, you know, rains in the cool winter, that definitely is going to affect the vines and how they react. What we're seeing so far is interesting. I'm seeing a lot of vines actually producing a lot of flowers. So we're actually starting off the year with really nice flower production. And I think that's a reactionary kind of thing. The vines are reacting.
It's not bud break we're talking about, or?
Not bud break. We're just past bud break.
Yeah.
Right at bud break is when you start to see the flower production.
Yeah.
Especially with a varietal like Pinot Noir, one of the first things Pinot Noir throws out is that flower. So that's the most critical time, is that beginning.
And that's how Pinot says hello.
Exactly.
To the growing season. Yeah,
here's the flower, right? And you'll know right away what you're up against. If you're going to have very low yields, you're going to have a good idea right away if there's not a lot of flowers being produced.
Yeah.
The start of 2014, we're seeing pretty decent flower production and good size flowers too. So I think it's a survival technique with the vines. I mean, they've seen such little rainfall that they're reacting in such a way, trying to produce a lot of seeds.
Yeah.
And that was something we saw last year. Last year, we shouldn't have had the big crop that we had. We had a relatively warm, dry winter. And typically that means that we're going to have a lower yield. But I think it was so dry that the vines reacted to that, and we actually got a pretty nice yield.
So they go on, potentially going on overdrive here as a way to compensate for the lack of rain.
Right.
Wow.
And as a farmer, we've got to be careful with that because there isn't enough moisture in the soil to support that kind of crop. So controlling crop size is going to be a big thing to keep an eye on this year and not let the vines produce too much. And that's something that we do every year, but I think even more so this year. Now, I mean, in Santa Barbara, we've also got pretty decent aquifers, so we have the ability to water, but you can't really replicate rain. The one thing that we lost the most of this year was our cover crops. Because we didn't have adequate rainfall, our cover crops didn't produce very well, which is going to diminish our organic material in the soil. So that's one of my biggest concerns. The vineyards that we've got sprinklers on, we were able to irrigate and get a little bit of a cover crop, but nowhere near the levels where I would like to see it.
So the flowers could signal another hefty output as we get through growing season. Are you going in, though? Are you cutting anything back? Are you tearing anything down just as a precautionary measure?
Not at this point. I mean, we're doing our standard practices. So right now, as the vines get to be about 4 or 5 inches tall, we're going through and we're doing shoot selection. So we're picking out the shoots that we want to grow this year. So we get rid of anything that's growing in the wrong position, shoots that don't have any flowers on them, doubles where shoots are growing doubly out of one location. And we try and fine-tune the vine as much as we can at this point to what we want it to look like throughout the course of the season.
So 2013, looking back, if we were to take a cue at all from last year, also a relatively dry, warmer winter, big output. What varietals fared well last year in 2013?
Everything did really well last year, actually. You know, our Pinot Noirs were spectacular. We've had a couple great vintages. 2013 was definitely a really nice vintage, yield-wise and quality-wise. And as long as the farmers who were taking care of the sites were doing a good job and being diligent and not letting those vines overproduce, they're going to have another, you know, solid year this year. And that's the key to farming is keeping that consistent yield and not letting the vines overproduce. Underproducing, that's something we have less control over. That's, you know, dictated by Mother Nature and what the curveball she throws at us.
What about regions specifically in Santa Barbara County? With that type of a season that we may see, you know, being magnified this particular year, any areas fared well with that sort of unusually hot initiation to the growing season?
You know, the Bordeaux varietals always need a little bit more heat, that's for sure. So you get out into Happy Canyon, you know, I'm really pleased with the Sauvignon Blanc I produced last year. It really turned out beautifully. We got some great flavors out of our stuff out of Happy Canyon, which we blend with something from the more center of the San Ynez Valley, and it was beautiful. And even with a low alcohol content as well, so it was able to ripen nicely and not get overripe.
And how is that Sauvignon Blanc different in the center of the valley, where I'm assuming it's a little bit cooler than some of the nooks and crannies in Happy Canyon?
Yeah, so Happy Canyon, we get more of the rich, ripe flavors, and then the center of San Ynez is where I'm really trying to pull more acidity out of it. So we actually harvest the two the same day. So sugar levels are a little bit different on both, as well as pH. So we get a much stronger acidity from the center of San Ynez as opposed to the stuff that we're pulling out of Happy Canyon. We let the Happy Canyon stuff get nice and ripe.
Yeah, yeah. Sauvignon Blanc has kind of become a bit of a go-to when people are trying to find that Chardonnay alternative. At least out of here, I feel like Sauvignon Blanc production has improved and increased here in the last couple of years.
San Ynez has really become known for Sauv Blanc. I think that we're producing some of the best in the world. There's no doubt about it, and it's just getting better as we're discovering those niches and those better spots for it. It's as synonymous with Santa Barbara as Pinot Noir is or Syrah should be.
Interesting. Syrah should be, because it's not yet.
It is. But Syrah,
I hear a lot of crying over Syrah not being as recognized and championed as it should be.
It's going to get
consumer,
there.
At least.
Yeah, it's going to get there. It's a tough varietal because it does well in every climate, it will produce a completely different wine in every climate. And with an uneducated consumer base, it's really hard to understand unless you know the areas. And because if you buy a bottle of Syrah, you want to know at least what that tastes like to a point. And because Syrah is so diverse, it can taste like anything. It can be super, you know, white pepper spice if it's a cool climate and acidity. Or if it's a hot climate, it can be more the leather and the fruit. So you need to know a little bit more about where the grapes are grown to really enjoy Syrah. And I think that, you know, coming up, Michael Larner he championed the Ballard Canyon AVA, which is dedicated to Syrah, which it should be. It's the perfect spot for Syrah. Yeah. I mean, I make one Syrah from Ballard Canyon and I love it. It's some of the best stuff that comes into our winery each year. So
when I've done blind tastings, it's with Syrah that I find the biggest sort of spectrum of flavors, of mouthfeel, and it's all good. Mm-hmm. And yet it's so wonderful to see just sort of how malleable that grape can be, because it can go in such a variety of different growing conditions and fare well.
It's a fun grape, there's no doubt.
Now, obviously, it's been a hot winter here into the 2014 season. Frost, is it still a concern?
Yes, definitely. You know, we're coming right up and out of the frost scare. You know, the latest frost we've ever seen in the area that I've been aware of was April 20th in 2008. Now we're coming right up on April, and
we're
right in the mix of it right now. So I mean, it's sleepless nights when we've got the potential for frost, and frost alarms going off, as the temperature drops, and a lot of early mornings. But we haven't had anything too bad at this point in time. Knock on wood, and hopefully we fare well going out of this. So it would be great to have a season like this to start off this way. It's been a while since we've had such a nice warm start. We've had the last several years just one frost after another after another. And last year, again, part of the reason we had such a nice crop is it was the first year in a while we had a really nice start to the year, and we weren't dealing with those cold mornings in the springtime.
Yeah. Is one morning, early morning of like some pretty bad frost enough to really screw things up?
Wipe you out.
Really? Yeah. I mean,
2008. Kind of unexpected frost that hit us. No one was really prepared for it. I know I wasn't. Not all my vineyards have got frost protection. We got frost protection on in the vineyards that did, but there was one vineyard that we had finally rebuilt the cordons of a much older vineyard, a Syrah vineyard, and got it to a point where it looked beautiful. It was the best it looked in years, and got out there that morning and it was gone.
Devastating.
Yeah, we lost the entire crop. It did not come back and produce anything for us that year. And the next 2 years were minimal, ton to the acre at best.
Wow. So you take a hit, and then for a couple of years even, to rebound is a tough thing.
If it's bad enough.
Yeah. Financially speaking, that can really, particularly for a small wine operation, that can be a real stinker.
It can be devastating. Right? There's a lot of stories of wineries in the last few years who have suffered dramatically because of the frost over and over again. It will set you back dramatically. I mean, the difference between a 3-ton yield and a 1-ton yield or a 0.5-ton yield is dramatic. You still got to pay the same amount of money, more or less, to farm the vineyard. You want to keep the vines alive and healthy. And typically you're doing a couple additional things to try and recover from that frost.
So. And what could be frustrating is that there may be a huge public clamoring for that wine, people wanting to buy. And if you simply are unable, if you've not been given the tools to make it, I mean, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Sure. It's the 2011 vintage, spectacular vintage. I mean, the quality was wonderful. It was really the beginning of us coming out of that frost.
Yeah.
And there's not much wine.
So looking back, what has been 2014 aside, and we're hoping that 2014 comes out to be one of those, record, setting types of vintages. What vintage stands out as one that really raked you over the coals?
As far as difficulty goes?
Yeah, difficulty, and it was just one of those years you'd rather forget.
2010.
2010, not that long ago.
Nope, not that long ago. So again, coming out of the frost problems we've had, right as we were coming up to harvest time, the exact date escapes me, but we were about to pick. I mean, like next week we were going to pick, kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, 3 days of ungodly heat. 110, 112, 114.
Yikes.
One site. I had one site hit 114 for 2 days in a row and 112 on the third.
Oh, wow.
And on top of all of that, it was also a very humid year. So we had major mildew issues all year long. So we're battling that. So we were exposing fruit. So leaf pulling and opening up canopies so that we could control the mildew. And then we get this massive heat wave right at the end. And it ripened grapes faster than you could, blink. And so we picked faster than we've ever picked. And all of our Pinot Noir in a matter of 3 days. We picked 30 acres in 3 days. And it was a challenging year. And the wines reflected. I mean, that's one thing about wine is it'll tell you exactly what happened that year and exactly where it came from. And
the wine don't lie either. Although you can, you can do, as winemakers, I know that there are tools of the trade to try to correct this and that. But at the end of the day, 2010 Pinot from the same site versus, say, 2013, we're talking two different wines.
Dramatically
right?
different, there's no doubt. I mean, there's still an underlying, a representation of the location. That's going to always be there, but you can taste in the 2010s the heat. Not necessarily, not alcohol heat, but there is definitely, they're higher alcohol wines for sure.
But riper?
One more time?
Riper flavors?
Riper flavors.
Yeah.
So that almost raisin quality in some of them. I mean, because there's only so much you can do once the grapes have come in. So in a year like that, we were about to pick. So our grapes were about, 23, 5, 24 bricks. And by the time we were able to get them in, they were a lot higher than that. And then we had to make wine. As a farmer, I tried to be a very hands-off winemaker. I want to bring the grapes in when they're perfect so I don't have to mess with them once they come in. And it's just add some yeast, take care of them, make sure everything is clean, and we make some wine. 2014, that was when I had to actually be a winemaker. Yeah. And really, really had to work hard at making those wines balanced and correct. I mean, you spend all that money farming them and you get thrown a curveball by Mother Nature like that. Well, now you got to fix that and make sure that you're able to still produce something that is drinkable, mm-hmm. as well as representative of the style that you're known for. You know, everybody's got a different approach to winemaking. So when you have something like that that almost destroys your approach to winemaking, you really got to step up the game and make some adjustments.
You know, I think as consumers, we lose sight of the fact that you've really only got one chance.
One chance a year to do this. It's not like beer.
Yeah. Hey, well, right. When you're picking those grapes at the end of the season, what it is what you get. Is it a constantly nerve-wracking experience as you're going through the growing season? Am I blowing that out of proportion?
I wouldn't go with nerve-wracking. We have plenty of stressful moments, and it's still farming, and it still does take an entire year to get all the way through this. So even if something does happen in the vineyard, there is time to make that decision to how to deal with that.
Yeah.
Now, there are plenty of things that will come in and hurt you more dramatically, and you can't react because it's already happened. You know, damage, bird damage, deer damage. Those guys come through, and they'll do what they want to do, and there's no bringing that back. But if you see things like mildew or something like that cropping up, and we're always constantly monitoring for that kind of thing, we can make adjustments and deal with that, mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. But there are definitely things that will set you back that you can't recover from, and you just do the best you can from there forward.
Now, we got the Dirt Don't Lie grab bag here.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of questions here. The idea, obviously, you got to be raw and honest. But the idea here is to kind of get deeper into the mind and into the habits.
You gonna
of
hypnotize me?
Yeah, that comes at the end.
All right.
ever lost your temper during frost?
It's brutal. Frost is awful. I mean, I've slept better this year than I have in a long time because we've had such a nice warm spring. But I mean, 2009, I was having frost alarms go off at 11 o'clock at night, you know, so that means that I got to leave the house and I got to go now turn on sprinklers and call my guys out and have them hit the sprinklers and hit all these spots and hope that we get it on in time and hope that we have enough water to deal with it.
Yeah.
And hope that the system works. There's been mornings where we get out there. One vineyard that has a system that is what's considered a low flow system. So it doesn't have pressure that it needs to, it's just a different system and you have to turn it on sooner rather than the regular sprinklers. And if you don't turn it on soon enough, because the piping is so small, the piping will freeze.
Mm-hmm.
So we had one morning where we got out there just a little too late and only half the field turned on because the other half the field was already frozen.
Wow.
And I mean, that's detrimental. And then there's the fans. You get out there to turn a fan on, can't get the thing started because it's freezing out.
Yeah.
The engine just doesn't want to get going. And you can't call a mechanic at, 1 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday.
You become a mechanic.
You got to be able, your guys or you got to be able to take care of that right then and there and in the freezing cold, in the dark. And that's the worst. I mean, frost will drive you crazy.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about it. And you get out there, like I said, there's some vineyards that don't have protection. And so what are you going to do?
Let me ask you this. Would you rather have a rewind button or a pause button during frost season? When that alarm goes off at 11 o'clock at night, are you hoping things don't progress and stay as is? Or are you hoping that you can turn back time and maybe do something different?
I guess a pause button would be good. Your whining is not going to help you any.
Yeah.
A little bit more time. I'm always asking for a little bit more time, to get things done. The nice thing is we do have frost alarms, and the alarms are set at specific temperatures. So it gives us enough time to get out to these areas. The story I told you about the low flow, that was a learning curve. Never worked with a system like that. So we had no idea how badly it could fail.
Yeah.
And we actually set that one to go off at 39 degrees. So we have to turn that system on when it hits 39 degrees. It may not freeze that night, but we got to turn that system on because if it gets down to 36,
yeah, right,
it's going to be cold enough to freeze those small hoses and then the system's not going to work.
All right, how's this one? If aliens landed in front of you and offered you either endless water for survival or vines immune to all pests and fungus, what would you pick?
I'll take the water.
Take the water.
Yeah.
You're okay dealing with some pests and fungus every so often.
There's ways to deal with that. Not having water is not a good thing.
Okay. You're out in the vineyard on your own. What are some of the things that are going through your mind as soon as you get off the truck and you're standing there in the midst of the vines? How does your mind start working? What's your checklist?
Usually, I mean, when I get to the field, I get a good glance at the whole field and see the color. What color are the vines at this moment in time? The field will tell you a lot. Just the color of the vines, and that'll get you started. And then once you get the kind of overall view, then I get right in there, get a lot closer, and looking at specifics, seeing how even growth is. Looking for any kind of insect population. Those are definitely the things that we're looking for right away. Shoot tips. That'll tell you a lot what's going on with the vine. If the tendrils are reaching out farther than the leaves, or if they're wilted and laying down.
So the visual right out of the gate is important to you.
Definitely.
Okay. If you could trade places with another wine farmer for a week, who would it be?
That's a tough question.
You're in good company out here.
There's no doubt. To be honest, I'd be very nervous to deal with any other vineyard that I'm not familiar with. I mean, it takes a long time to get familiar with your locations. And there's definitely spots I'd be interested in getting more involved with. I'm lucky that I get to grow in a lot of other areas. I've never grown up in Santa Maria, to be honest. So it would be fun for me to get more involved in a vineyard up in that area, just because it's not something I'm familiar with. But one specific, I don't know if I would want half of the problems that some of these other guys have got to deal with.
Got enough to deal with on your own.
Yeah.
Ryan Carr is done his last harvest. He's at the pearly gates, and St. Peter comes and says, before you walk in, you can have any wine you could possibly imagine, and you could sip it with anybody you can think of, living or dead.
Any wine, maybe some... It's a tough one too. I always like the bubbles. The bubbles are some of my favorite. A nice Krug would be spectacular to have. Mm-hmm. And who with? That's a tough one too. Lost my grandfather not too long ago, so he'd probably be right up there with it.
All right, sure. A little bubbly with grandpa?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I like that.
He got to see you, though, flourish as a winemaker.
Yeah, we lost him not too long ago. So, and he had a little bit of the Alzheimer's, so that was real kind of sad. So he got the very beginning of it, and he got to taste some of the first stuff, and some of his comments and my grandmother's comments are some of the reasons I'm still going, because they liked the first stuff I made.
Yeah, that's key, right?
Yeah, we brought a whole bunch of, there was only 10 cases of the first vintage that I made, and we brought a lot of it back to Wisconsin, where my mom's family is. And that was the reaction I got from those people was really part of the reason I moved forward with my label.
Yeah, and here you are.
There we go.
Well, dirt don't lie, and neither does Ryan Carr, right? That's what we got out of this.
That's right. There's no doubt.
Great hanging out with you once again.
You as well.
We'll see you out in the vineyard.
Yeah,
most definitely. And here's the 2014 being one of those vintages to remember.
I think it will be. I think that we have no choice in the matter.
All right, buddy. Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Cheers.
This has been the Dirt Don't Lie podcast, where we like to keep conversations with Santa Barbara wine farmers totally unfiltered. I'm Gabe Saglier, your host, senior editor for TravelZoo.com and wine columnist for the Santa Barbara News Press. This podcast was recorded live at Erickson Sound Labs in the heart of the Santa Ynez Valley. Our executive producer is Will Fernandez, and our original music is by Jacob Edward Cole. Want more? Check out DirtDon'tLie.com. Cheers.